This is Matt Wells at UN News. Cutting-edge digital tools can help us to deliver the Sustainable Development Goals and improve life for all. But if the right policies are not put in place, there's a real danger that these so-called frontier technologies will exacerbate inequality and destroy quality jobs, the UN is warning. Areas of particular concern include the growing use of artificial intelligence, which has been developing at a faster rate than expected. It's often based on poorly understood algorithms produced with inbuilt bias and prejudice. These are some of the conclusions of this year's World Economic and Social Survey, produced by the UN Department of Social and Economic Affairs, DESA. Conor Lennon from UN News spoke with Dr. Hamid Rashid, chief of DESA's Development Research Branch, and started by asking him to give some examples of frontier technologies.
Frontier technologies are the one at the edge of the frontier. The most recent innovations in technologies that include artificial intelligence or 3D printing or automation and robotics, autonomous vehicles, gene editing technologies. So a broad spectrum of technologies that we are looking at.
And these are technologies we hear a lot in the business world and also in the consumer domain, maybe not so much when it comes to sustainable development, but there is a lot happening in this field, isn't there?
Yes. We're not looking at the market point of view about how whether these technologies are efficient, whether they'll be, the bottom line will improve for the farms producing those technologies. We're looking at their implications for sustainable development outcomes, precisely how that will affect employment, income distribution, how that will affect social inclusion, how that will affect environmental sustainability, how that will affect social cohesion, peace and stability. So we're looking at the broad effect of those technologies on the broad range of SDGs that we have as our mandate.
What are the most exciting new developments that you've seen over the past year?
I think that what is both fascinating and alarming is what's happening in the AI field right now, because the speed of change in AI is faster than we anticipated. The trajectory is a steep trajectory. It can fundamentally change the way we work, we organize ourselves. Many occupations will disappear altogether with AI. Routine jobs will not be there, whether it's financial accounting, whether it's bookkeeping. So we can see a big impact on employment coming from AI side. Of course, it will also raise a lot of ethical issues, because AI is often driven by algorithms. And those algorithms are black box. So there will be a lot of prejudices and bias incorporated in the AI algorithms. So we have to be very careful about the efficiency impact, which may have, make our life easier to make decisions, but it may also have huge negative impact on issues like fairness and justice, and how people would be, whether they will reinforce the existing biases or change the biases. That's what we have to look out.
And those kind of concerns have been raised by people who work in this field. Some have called for a charter, some kind of ethical charter for data scientists. Yes. Is that something that you would support?
Yes, we have been very vocal in the report about that we need a global consensus. It cannot be managed by one country, even if one country is the most important innovator of AI technology, but there's what we call regulatory arbitrage. You can have a certain standards in one country, but these are the innovations that are not brick and mortar innovation. So they will move to another location, another jurisdiction completely, and have the same kind of outcomes. So we have to have a global minimum consensus about how we want to handle these issues posed by AI, by automation, and by other technological changes. And that's why the UN is very important, central, can play a very important role in bringing all the stakeholders together.
And to return to jobs, earlier point about how many jobs will be destroyed, that's definitely going to happen. Yeah. Are you confident that there will be enough new jobs to compensate for the loss of those jobs?
That's a very good question. In fact, this is where the economists would like to believe, certain economists like to believe that this technological change is neutral, meaning that some jobs will be destroyed, some will be created. But that neutrality is a fallacy, because even if the number of jobs remain the same, the quality of jobs would vary. So you destroy some mid-range jobs of accountants and bookkeepers and create a lot of jobs of gardeners and masseuses and people who are menial labor. They would earn minimum wages or below minimum wages. So they're not, all the numbers may look similar. Okay, we have destroyed this many jobs, we have created as many jobs. But that in terms of social impact, they could be vastly different. So we have to look at the quality of jobs that is being destroyed and that's being created. And if we look at that, then what we see, we call it skill polarization. The skills are extremely polarized at two ends. You have high-skill jobs and low-skill jobs. There you see the growth, but not in the medium skill category. And that's where the danger lies. So,
and this is very worrying because we're seeing already a rise in inequality. We're seeing the very rich steaming ahead in a very tiny 0.01%. And then if this increases, that's going to be extremely damaging. What kind of recommendations do you have?
We have both two kinds of recommendations. One is that, of course, we have to have some kind of a broader understanding about where we want to go as a society, as a global community, how much we want to automate, how much everything has to be driven by market considerations. So we talk about technological change driven by market considerations, but also we talk about technological change that is socially driven or SDG-driven technological change. There we may have to probably put some brakes here and there. So countries have to say, okay, look, we have to look at the, we're not probably ready there. We're not there yet in terms of having everything automated. Even our decisions of how we allocate resources can be automated, but do we really want to go there? Maybe we can use those resources for something, for a better outcome on an environment or other social, suppressing social issues. So I think that's one area that where you have to be very careful that we don't want to go too fast.
Is that realistic to be put brakes on technology? People in Silicon Valley would say it's impossible. You can't stop progress.
I think in the history there are, this again we didn't explicitly discuss in the report, but in the history there are episodes where we have been able to nuance the technological change. We didn't just go mindless way, okay, we'll have progress for the sake of change, for the sake of change. We looked at, you know, some of the impacts, and there are many ways you can handle that, how you tax innovation, how you manage the innovation firms. And one of the things that we discuss is that sometimes innovations can go completely unwieldy when there's no competition. And now the technology field, especially the frontier technology field, is extremely concentrated. Just to give you a number, 13% of the world population concentrated in three countries and regions, U.S., Europe, European Union, and Japan, they account for 82% of all new patents that are being filed. So, and that trend has been actually going in the direction of more concentration, not less concentration. And even if you go beyond the country numbers, you see few firms on those in those countries are dominating all the innovations. And obviously, they would want to maximize the bottom line, profit bottom line. But the governments will have to see, okay, we want the profitable firms, but we also have to look at the overall impact on the society. And there, you have to have a political economy dialogue within the country, but also across countries as well. It's realistic in the sense that if we don't do anything, the cost will be too high for the society as a whole. And we have already seen many, many, many unraveling of social orders in many country contexts. And a lot of it has to do with technological change.
We're finally starting to see governments starting to get to grips with the potential dangers of having all of this internet power concentrated within three or four companies.
Yes, absolutely. You know.
Well, finally, let's just turn to this idea of leapfrogging, this idea that digital technologies in countries in Africa, for example, mm-hmm. can benefit from technology which is more powerful than before, that's cheaper than ever before. Is this something that you think is a positive development?
Yes, I think this is an opportunity, but it's a narrow window of opportunity because leapfrogging, meaning that you can bypass some of the traditional technological, so it doesn't have to be a linear progress from technology from Volkart to the modern technology. So what you have is that, for example, if you look at the cloud-based platforms, you know, where you can have basically people are able to use their surplus labor as a taxi driver. So they're the part-time taxi driver with different platforms, or using their extra spare room in their house for making some money. We didn't need traditional technologies for that. There, some of the countries are actually taking huge advantage of those advances in social platforms or network economies and creating a lot of jobs and employment opportunities there. But then also you have to think about those opportunities. You know, you need to have minimum enabling conditions in those countries, and that is not often met. Electricity is a must, but still 1 billion people in the world don't have access to electricity. Another 2.5 billion people have intermittent access to electricity. They are what we call under-electrified. And then internet access is even more unequal. So if we can create the even playing fields, then we can also reduce some of the gaps in terms of knowledge accumulation. Right now, online learning is a very important, powerful tool. And many countries, you don't have to come to Stanford or MIT to get some advanced physics lessons. Many of them are available online right now, and they're open learning, open source. And this can be tapped. Some talents in developing countries can tap into those resources if they have the basic internet. So you have created even playing field in terms of dissemination, but you have to also improve access to those knowledge and technologies that are available.
And so, for that, you need the involvement and understanding of the institutions, of the government.
Absolutely. You know, that the governments, and we make a strong case of the role the national innovation systems can play. It's just a cluster of institutions, universities, particular ministries in the government, some civil society organizations. They can create a critical mass of institutions and policies that support development, diffusion, and adoption of new technologies. You know, so sometimes not all countries can develop all technologies. That will not be cost effective. Sometimes you have to have an international transfer. But national innovation system can decide which technologies they need at what point in time. So it can play a role of an intermediary, making sure that right technologies are chosen. And we make that case that, you know, some technologies, there's scope for making them global public goods, creating so that access to those technologies, especially those technologies that are most needed for climate change or environmental sustainability, we have to make them less costly. And last point I want to make, that in the past, technological progress came at a very high cost. And the new technologies can make progress available to us, but at a lesser cost, if we have the right policies in place. So the objective would be to how to make technological progress less costly for society, less taxing on the environment, less taxing on natural resources or biodiversity. And we have the tools right now to achieve those objectives without creating further destabilizing effects.